Before we get started, I hope you'll celebrate with me that I've got two new great sponsors because I know they're going to be useful to you if you're building a business. The first is 99 Designs. They're the largest crowdsourced design company. And the best way to explain what they do is to tell you that I recently used them when I needed a template designed. And what I did was I described on 99designs.com what my ideal template needed to have. Next day, I got a batch of designs. I gave them all feedback, all the designers who created it. Day after that, I got a new batch of designs. I gave them feedback again. Next day, I had a new batch of designs. I finally picked the perfect one for me, and that's the one that I paid for. 99 Designs even let me pick the price that I paid. And you're going to be blown away by how many options you have. But if you don't like any of them, 99 Designs guarantees, and you don't have to pay for any of them. Check out 99design.com. Second company is DNA Mail. If you're running a business, you'd be a fool to also try to manage your own Microsoft Exchange server. I know because I was that fool taking on too much when it came to my email system. Let DNA Mail take care of it. They're going to guarantee uptime. They're going to give you 24/7 support. You can call up somebody in Los Angeles where I was recently living, not in a foreign country, not limited to a certain number of hours. You get all the support that you need so that you can collaborate with calendars, tasks, contacts, make sure your email is dependable, and so much more. And if you need Google Apps, they take care of you with that too. DNAmail.com. Finally, you already know about Grasshopper, the virtual phone system that entrepreneurs love. I've been talking here about how I have a Grasshopper phone number so I could be reached no matter where I am in the world, so I can have extensions, so I can have all the features that I need. Grasshopper.com will do the same thing for you. Check them out. Here's the program. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. And I got an email recently from a guy named Todd Smith in the audience who said, Andrew, I like what you're doing with the email, but let me help you out, give you a few suggestions of how you could improve it. And Todd and I went back and forth a few times. It was a big help. And as I looked up, I said, who is this guy? I looked him up. I found out that he had an interesting background. I said, you know, why don't I have Todd on Mixergy? And here he is. This is Todd Smith, the founder and creator of Little Things Matter. And Todd, welcome to Mixergy.
Well, great, Andrew. I've enjoyed your shows, and it's great to be a part of this one.
Well, thank you. And I'm going to actually jump right into the thing that stood out, the thing that stood out most when I looked at your biography. It said, here, let me read this line. I've got it on my screen. His business has generated more than $1 billion in sales and has paid him more than $23 million in commissions. What is this business?
Well, you know, just the quick summary of my background is, you know, I owned a printing business for 4.5 years, went from that to being one of the nation's top producing realtors, earning more than $250,000 a year. My first year selling real estate at age 23. Became top 15 in the United States by the time I was 28, and got a little burned out doing that. And then at age 28, back in 1990, I started my direct sales career, where as a result of my ability to teach and train and help develop people, I've been able to generate more than $1 billion with a B, like boy, $1 billion in sales, and more than $23 million in commissions. So it's been a great experience.
And when you say $1 billion in sales, is this for your company or for all the people who've gone through your course and have learned from you?
Yes, it's from the combined efforts of all the people who are part of the team that I have created, correct?
I see, okay. And when you say $23 million in commissions, does that mean commissions that go in your pocket or commissions in the combined pockets of the people who have learned from you?
No, that's a great question. No, these have all gone in my pocket.
Okay. Now, I put my financials up on the internet, and it was such a hard decision to do. I created a video where I talked about them, and I held on to it for months saying, I don't know. It's been nothing but good so far, even though I'm in South America and who knows what's going to happen here. But it was a tough decision. I'm wondering why you decided to be so public about your numbers.
Well, the reason is because at this point in my life, I've made a decision that I want to focus on helping other people, both personally and professionally. And so I've moved beyond my my background, and now I'm focusing pretty much 80-90% of my time on writing my book, developing my blog, running my Facebook page at Little Things Matter. And I believe one of the things that separates me from most people in my space is that I have done it. I'm not just somebody who took a public speaking class and I'm out now teaching people how to be successful. And, you know, as I look at most of the people in the personal and professional development space, you know, most of them have never even had a business outside of, you know, their personal and professional development business, the books perhaps they've written, their speaking engagement. So, you know, my son, who is one of my advisors at 23 years old, a wise young man, said, "Hey, Dad, you know, you're just like everybody else unless you distinguish yourself from the crowd." And so I made the decision to distinguish myself and to kind of talk about what my background has been, to talk about my success, including the income, because, you know, there's not a whole lot of people who've averaged more than $1 million a year in earnings for the last 20 years. So I feel it's one of the things that distinguishes me from the rest of the crowd.
I see. Okay. And we've gotten a sense too of how long it's taken you to make that and why you made the decision to do it. And you're right, by the way. I had an interview here with Guy Kawasaki who said, it's so easy to be an expert today. You put together a book. You don't even have to get a publisher for it. You go online, you find a self-publishing company, and you call yourself an expert. You go out and you speak, and before you know it, everyone else starts to consider you an expert. I've actually seen people who call themselves social media experts who don't have the following and the competence that you have on Facebook. I'm looking at your Facebook profile. I said, this guy has no business knowing all this stuff about Facebook. The experts who, or the people who call themselves experts, aren't able to do this. But you got people engaged in the post that you have. You'll post from your blog, and I suddenly will see 23 comments on there. You're using it to grow your mailing list. I just love it. From everything that I've seen from you, I can see how that experience that you've talked about in business is actually it's actually useful and it's actually helping you stand out. And that's one of the reasons why I was eager to have you on. So let's talk about how we got here. The first thing that you said that you did was you worked in the printing business. What was that?
Well, right out of high school, I was going to go into the workplace. My parents didn't have any money, so going to college wasn't an option for me. So I started digging ditches, laying cable, got laid off on my birthday, which was in November. I went out and decided to be a UPS runner and ran packages to the doors during the Christmas holidays, got laid off on Christmas, and my brother said, "Hey, you know, you want to move up to Chicago?" I lived in Colorado at the time, and we can start a business together, a silk screening business, printing t-shirts and caps and jackets. And I said, sure. I mean, at that point, I'd been laid off two jobs 6 months out of high school. And so that was my entry into the entrepreneurial world. And together we built that business into the second largest printing business of its type in the Chicagoland market. And along with the growth of that, had 25 employees and a lot of headaches and a lot of stress and a lot of pressure. And so I kind of thought, well, maybe life would be easier if I didn't have all that. And that's when I got into real estate and moved forward from there.
What kind of headaches did you have?
Well, the biggest headaches were, without question, dealing with my employees. I mean, it was always something going on. Somebody needs a mental health day. I mean, somebody's late for work. Somebody's got personal problems. It was just a continued challenge. And part of that was in the line of work that I was in. You know, most of my employees were on the low end of the pay scale. And so when you've got employees on the low end of the pay scale, you have a lot of headaches.
Right. And they're not doing this because this is a passion and career that they hope to spend the rest of their lives enjoying. They're doing it because they need the money. What did you do right in that space? What did you do right in the printing business?
I think that probably more than anything, it's what I've done right in everything I've done. I've strived for excellence in what I've done. I've looked at what I can do, I've looked at what I'm doing and asked, how can I do this better? And I've just strived for excellence. I've identified what are the activities that I need to engage in to be successful, and then I have focused on mastering those activities.
And you did that even back then, early 20s, first business. What were the activities that you needed to focus on?
Well, first of all, quality customer service. I mean, that was a huge factor, building relationships with the customers. Certainly marketing, doing a lot of different testing, refining different marketing methods, finding out what works, what doesn't work, making the prospecting calls that nobody in sales likes to make, but I was willing to do it, calling people that I knew had a need for the type of services that we provided. And every call I made, I would get off that call and evaluate how I did how could I do better? And then I would, engage in the next phone call, continuing to refine what I'm doing and striving to be the best at what I did.
So how would you find people to call? How did you identify who you're going to call?
Well, in the market that we were at, it was, for us, pretty much, we were looking for large organizations, large companies that would have a need for the types of services that we provided, but also the advertising specialty industry. The advertising specialty industry is a huge industry where they buy everything from printed pens and paper cubes to, printed napkins and everything else. And so we were a vendor to the advertising specialty industry. And so a lot of my efforts were put talking to people who were out resellers of the types of products that we marketed.
Okay, so you'd make a phone call to one of them, you'd go through your pitch, you'd go through the process of getting to know them, you'd have the full conversation, hang up the phone, you'd say, what did I do right? What could I have done differently? Where was I a little bit weak? What did you learn? What are some of the things that you learned as you went through that process?
Well, I probably the thing that stands out first to me is I learned how to address different kinds of objections that people had. So every time somebody would say something, and where I really refined this was in my real estate career, where I would get used to no matter what somebody would say, I was ready for the response. And then, over a process of time, you get to know, hey, this is the best response for this question or this objection. And then you just keep doing the one that works the best over and over again.
I see. So you start to identify common objections, common issues that people have. You test out different responses or different ways of presenting the same response. You see the one that people understand and the one that really gets them excited, and that's what you end up using in the future. And the more you do that, the better you become as a salesman, as a presenter of your ideas.
And combined with, everything from the phone calls that I would make to being able to get to the right people, to when I'm talking with them, to my phone energy, to the smile on my voice when I had the conversation. I mean, it was just all of these little things that that I would focus on.
All right. I want to move on to RE/MAX, your next business. But I've got to ask you about the energy in your voice. That's a hard thing to put on. Sometimes I'll come on here and I wonder if the audience knows it. And I don't have the energy for the interview, and I'm a little bit shaky on the information that I have about my guest. And it's hard to say, Andrew, you're on for an hour, give it everything you've got. Intellectually, you understand that's what we need to do. But how do you do it? And I'm sure that other people in the audience are also making phone calls on days that they don't have energy or trying to go out and make sales on days they don't have energy. What do we do when we don't have it?
Well, one of the things that most people don't know about me, and even when I tell them, they don't believe it, but I am an extreme introvert, meaning, if you take the Myers-Briggs test on a scale of 1 to 1, on a scale of 1 to 20, I mean, I am all the way slammed on the introvert side. Wow. And so for me, it's not a natural thing. And it's just a matter of something I've got to do. I mean, there's, we often hear, focus on your strengths and make your weaknesses irrelevant. But if your weaknesses are relevant, you better make them strengths. And that's what I've done. And so when it's showtime, it's showtime. I mean, when it's time to pick up the phone and make phone calls, I know what I got to do, and I know how I need to present myself. And there's been a many a day that I have had personal challenges. I have not felt well. I have had low energy levels. I've had bad night's sleep. But when it's time to pick up that phone, it's time to slap your hands together. It's time to get yourself fired up and get yourself in the right state of mind. So
how do you do that? How do you get yourself fired up when you don't have the energy to get yourself fired up?
Well, if I'm really lacking energy, one of the things I do is I'll have an energy drink, or I'll have some espresso just to give myself a little advantage. But I mean, sometimes it's just a matter of slapping my hands together and firing myself up. And in sales, sometimes I'd imagine chewing a log. I'd get that log and just imagine taking bites of a log and firing myself up. So sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do to get yourself in the game.
I know what you mean, and I'm seeing it as you're doing this right now. You know what? It's interesting. Sometimes I will sit here at my desk and I will try to get myself fired up by just sitting here and thinking about the answer, and that's not it. I see Shakao in the audience, loves it, and a couple of other people who saw it. Todd loves that kind of energy. And I think you're right. I need to just get up and move around, or even in my seat, move and create some action, and that action will hopefully wake me up and get me
slapping your hands together, firing yourself up.
All right, I love that. All right, so I was introducing the next business. This is RE/MAX. What did you do? Actually, how did you get connected with RE/MAX?
Well, when I was in my printing business, I started to go to the No Money Down seminars, and I realized in doing that, well, hey, there could be some money made in this real estate business. And then I started interviewing real estate agents and realized I knew more than most of them. And then I started looking at the kind of money they made, and I said, wow, I said, this could be a way for me to start a new career and not have all the headaches that I currently have and be in control, more control of my my future. So I said, hey, I'm going to go get my real estate license and get started selling real estate.
When you say you interviewed real estate agents, how did you do that?
Are you referring to something I just said now?
Yeah, you said it a moment ago. That you were interviewing real estate agents and you started to see that you knew more about it than they did. And you said, well, they're making good money. Why don't I give it a shot? How did you find this new industry? How did you even, what do you mean by interviewed real estate agents?
Well, I would interview them based upon the criteria that I was taught in the No Money Down seminars with the type of real estate I was looking for in order to get those No Money Down deals. And so I was pretty much asking real estate agents questions that would help me find the kind of deals that they talked about at these seminars. And most of the agents were completely clueless with the type of stuff I was asking. So it kind of was a bit of a confidence builder that maybe this is something I can do.
How were the No Money Down seminars? Did they actually work, what you were learning there?
Well, I think that they're just exactly what they sound like. They're No Money Down seminars. You go there, you listen to somebody, you get, you buy their audio program. I mean, I was in real estate for 4.5 years. I mean, I sold 430 homes. I saw a lot of homes. There were very, very, very few homes that with me in the business that I was able to acquire with little money down, but none with no money down.
I see. Okay, so you got into this area. You got into those seminars. You went out and you started started putting into action what you learned, and you realized this probably isn't going to work. But look at these guys; they're making good money, and they don't know as much as I do, and they're not as passionate as I am. They're not going out of their way the way I am. Why don't I look into getting into the space? You started working for RE/MAX. You were how old when you went there?
I was 23 years old when I got started.
Okay. And you got into the RE/MAX Hall of Fame at 28. How did you become such a great real estate agent?
Well, the first thing that I believe is a key in being successful at anything, and this is a great point for all your audience, is that if you want to be successful at something, the smartest thing you can do is to learn from those who've been successful. And so what I did is I identified the nation's number one selling real estate agent. I lived in Chicago. He lived in Denver, Colorado. I called him. He was impressed that I would have an interest in learning from him. I asked him if I flew to Colorado, if he'd spend a day with me. He said he would. In fact, here's a guy who was the number one selling realtor who told me nobody had ever called and wanted to spend time with him. And so I flew to Colorado. I spent a day with him and picked his brain, and he shared with me his insights. And one of the things that he stressed was the importance of having discipline. And that, a lot of agents will sit around the office and open their mail and do all those kinds of things. But that really, if you want to be a top achiever, you have to be willing to push yourself to do what the other agents aren't willing to do, and that's prospecting. I got started, and I was very disciplined in my prospecting efforts. I blocked out time every day where I was going to make my prospecting calls. I generally did it first thing in the morning because that's when most of the people I were calling were open and most receptive. I mean, I learned that, as an example, if I called a for sale by owner in the morning, they had a better attitude than if I called them at the end of the day. So these are all just the little refinements that I would make in what I was doing. And so I very simply went out and was very committed to prospecting every day. And oftentimes I'd put that phone to my ear and I'd say, I am not putting this phone down for 1 hour. I don't care how bad I've got to go to the bathroom. I am not putting it down. And I would hold that phone to my ear and I would continue to prospect. And I will tell you, Andrew, that I believe, and obviously I've done a lot of analysis of my success trying to say, okay, why have I been successful? Why haven't others been as successful? I believe of the nearly 700 little things on my list that I teach, there's not one that has a greater value to the market than discipline does. And I mean, for a guy 23 years old to make $250,000, I mean, that's in today's money like $500,000. It wasn't because I was good. It wasn't because, you know, I had some skills that others didn't have. It was because I had discipline and I pushed myself to make those calls every single day with my heart beating out of my chest, with my armpits sweating, with my underwear stuck to my butt. I pushed myself to do what I had to do. And it was uncomfortable. I never did get comfortable doing it. I went to the Anthony Robbins seminars where they say, you know, do this and you squeeze your leg with every yes you get. And, you know, you try to make yourself think that you really like it. You try those positive affirmations. None of that really worked for me. I just said, hey, you know what? I don't like prospecting, but it's what I've got to do if I want to be successful. And so that's how I became successful. My business certainly over time got to be a lot more referrals, but I started off calling people right out of what was called a crisscross directory. I'd go right down every single address on every single street in an area, call them. Then I graduated into calling for sale by owners, people that were selling their homes themselves, to expired listings, really began to focus on everywhere that I could find somebody who might be interested in selling their home. So I pretty much specialized in for sale by owners. If people knew they were competing with me on a for sale by owner, they would pretty much know they were going against the wrong guy.
All right. So what made – all right. I understand if you do it every single day, you're going to find the people who are going to sell or who are going to say, I don't want to do for sale by owner anymore. This guy Todd Smith sounds like he knows what he's talking about. He's going to increase the price of my home enough that he can cover his own commission and also help me earn more without all the agita of trying to do it myself. I understand that. But if there are two people making that that proposal, why are you the one who gets it and they don't?
Well, one of the things that I did back then that I didn't realize that was such a good thing that today is very apparent is that when I would go to a for sale by owner, and basically when I would call them, I can almost still remember, you know, hi, you know, my name is Todd Smith with RE/MAX. The reason that for my call is I'd like to stop by your home and give you one of my for sale by owner kits that will help you sell the home yourself. Would you allow me to stop by and drop off one of my kits? And so, you know, they would, some people, if I got them, another thing that was a key is getting them the first day their home went on the market for sale by owner, because then they hadn't had 100 agents call them. So I tracked it, and man, the first day somebody's home came on the market for sale by owner, I was the first person calling them first thing in the morning before they'd been wore out. So I had success doing that. But then, you know, I was used to every objection from, you know, hey, my mother's a realtor, to my brother's a realtor, my neighbor's a realtor, my best friend's a realtor. You know, we're hoping to sell the home ourselves. We'd hope not to have a realtor. And so I'd say, you know what, I know that. If you want to sell your home and you want to use your mother, then great. My goal is to help you sell the home yourself. And I put together a kit with some great ideas and information that will help you learn how you can be more effective in marketing the home, how you can be more effective in selling it. And there's no charge for this. And they'd say, well, you know, what's in it for you? If I can help you sell the home yourself, all I would ask is you keep me in mind in case you know of anybody in the future who would need to employ services of a realtor. That's all I would ask is referrals. And so people would say, okay, great, come on by. And when I went by, I would never talk to them about what I could offer them. It was always about what they can do to sell their home themselves. Me giving them tips about if somebody makes them an offer, don't respond then. Walk in the other room. Talk to your spouse about it. Come back out. You know, I'd offer them my pager number, that if they had somebody that wanted to buy their home to page me, I'd come by. I'd be happy to write up the offer. No charge. So basically, I was a go-giver. I was willing to help these people at all expense sell the home themselves. And what they saw was that I was a person that cared. I was different than all the other realtors who wanted the listing. In fact, if they would say, how much will you charge to sell our home? I said, you know what, right now it's not about me charging anything. It's about you selling the home yourself. And if the day comes that you're not successful in selling the home, then obviously I'd love to be able to sit down with you, talk to you about, you know, what price we can sell your home for and the services I could provide. But let's first and foremost, let's focus on you selling the home yourself. And so that was my whole thing, how they could sell it. And I distinguished myself because they knew that I was sincere and genuine in that. And then oftentimes when they didn't sell, they would call me and I had no competition in most cases.
Would it happen often that somebody would start off selling themselves, have you show them how to do it well, and then have them give up?
That's how I got most all of the listings. They would put it on the market for sale by owner. They would try for whatever period of time that they really felt that they could afford to sell it. A lot of these people were having homes built. They had some flexibility. And so I would, you know, I would go meet with them. I would leave my for sale by owner kit. I had a little binder also that was called my career book that I would say, I'd like to pick this up in a few days. And they'd flip through it. It would show them all the things that I would do. I'd go home, write them a handwritten thank you note, send it to them. I was doing all the little things that distinguished myself. And so then as a course of just continuing to follow up and touch base with them to see how things were going, to see if I could offer any help, they would say, you know, Todd, I think we're ready to sit down and talk to you. And so it was just a matter of just waiting till the right time came. Sometimes it was 3 days later. Sometimes it was 3 months later. But I just continued to stay in touch and try to offer value.
Where'd you get the idea to come up with this kit?
I went to a seminar, and it all goes back to learning from what successful people have done. I went to a seminar where a guy had been one of the top-selling realtors in the country because he was a specialist in for sale by owners. And so his name was Roger Butcher, and I bought his whole program. I went, customized what he had provided, created my own for sale by owner kit, and had a custom printed envelope, the kit with all the things from how to show the home to, you know, how to negotiate offers. I even put copies of a contract in there that they could review it if they wanted to write it up on their, you know, themselves if somebody came. I'd give them everything they needed. In fact, if they didn't have a for sale sign in their yard, I had for sale by owner signs in my trunk that I would take out, put in their yard, and then down the bottom it had compliments of Todd Smith Remax. So that basically was me spraying in the yard. Any other realtor knew, hey man, Todd's here, and kind of put them, put a little fear in them to know that they were up against me. But it's the whole law of reciprocity. If you do enough to help other people, whether it's giving them ideas, giving them value, just like much of what you're doing here, Andrew, me leaving a sign behind, they feel a responsibility to at least involve me, to interview me and see what services I could provide to see if it's something that they wanted. And in most cases, what's funny is I almost always beat their mother, brother, aunt, uncle, sister, cousin out, because at the end of the day, they wanted somebody who was going to help them get top dollar for their home, and they had much more confidence in me than the other people.
The audience, by the way, is loving you. I see Brendan from musictrainer.com, when you were saying that you were basically spray painting your name on their lawn, I see that he was laughing. Dan Blank agrees, simple, brilliant. They love the discipline. Where's this motivation coming from? You know, to be able to stay, as you said, on the phone when you're sweating, when you're tired, when you've been hung up on, where's the motivation come from?
Well, Napoleon Hill says in the book Think and Grow Rich that desire is the starting point of all achievement. Even for years, I would say that success begins with desire, a burning desire, because without desire, you won't do what is required to succeed. And in most cases, what you're not willing to do is overcome the obstacle, the discipline. And so when I look at why I was successful, I believe I was successful because of the benefits of being what successful would provide for me. It was important to me. And so I believe the people who are successful at anything in life are the people who becoming successful is important to them, because, you know, I've worked with tens of thousands of people in my direct sales business, people who would say, you know, I've got the desire to live in a nicer home, to have a nicer car, you know, I want to make an extra $500 a month, but yet they wouldn't follow through and do what was required of them. And it's because the benefit of what they would gain was not important enough to them that they were willing to do what was required. So I believe that the true foundation to all motivation is based upon what is important to you. And to me, my goal has been to retire by the time I was 40. And so I did the math. I determined what kind of net worth I needed to build. And I'm not somebody that can tell you that the things that I've done were passions of mine. They were a means to an end. They were a way for me to accomplish what was important to me, and that is to be able to live here on the beach like I do now, to live, enjoy a great quality of life, to be at home with my wife and four children, and now my grandchild's running around. You may hear him running here in a minute. And, I just love working out of my home. I love the freedom and flexibility of doing what I want when I want, and that is what drove me.
You know, for me, that desire to succeed came from being a big nerd for most of my life, came from just not knowing how to even have a real conversation with people because I was just such an introvert and so shy and so socially awkward. In a city like Manhattan, where everybody seems to have everything and they're just exuding confidence as they walk down the street, you feel like, yeah, that guy is somebody. They are all somebody. And here I was feeling like a nobody. And I said, business is going to be my way of being something, of actually reaching who I feel I am inside, underneath this shyness and fear and social ineptitude. And so when it was time to sit and work hard, I was channeling all that desire to break free of that into every bit of work. And at the same time, because I was reading magazines like Forbes magazine and seeing what the possibilities were, beautiful homes, travel, and being able to do what you feel like, I said both of those motivators are acting on everything that I do. For you, what was that? Did you have that negative pain, that pain that you had to fight to break free of? Or am I just the only whack job who had that?
No, I think that it was. I think it's different for everybody, and I think in your case it was just different. For me, I had different things that I had to break through. I mean, I think we all have.
What were they?
You know, it's. I think they deal with our self confidence and how we really our self image and our self esteem. And when we're young, it's natural that we lack those things. I mean, unless we're raised in a home where our parents are telling us you're great, you're going to be the next president of the United States or whatever, and they just instill that in you. I think that you have those doubts, and so. When you were talking about, what it was like for you, I mean, I brought back memories of me of having my own doubts. Can I do this? Do I really have the ability? Am I worthy?
What was it? What were you fighting? We're fighting towards and we're also fighting against at the same time. What were you fighting against?
I think more than anything, I feel like the biggest thing I fought against is just laziness, meaning, I know what I need to do, but the key is doing it. And so I feel like I'm, my challenge always has been the challenge of being disciplined, doing what I know I should do when I don't feel like doing it. If there's something I need to do and I don't feel like doing it, then I say I must do it now. And so my challenge has always been pushing myself to do what I know I should do, even though I don't feel like doing it. Because the truth is, most of the things that really do make us money as entrepreneurs are the things that we don't want to do, but we need to do if we want to be successful. And that's been my biggest challenge, I think, more than anything else.
Can you take us through a time, this is a question that comes from AppRabbit is the username. Can you take us through a time where things were tough, where it was especially difficult, and then tell us what it was like and how you got out of it?
I'm thinking right now, obviously there's been all kinds of challenges I've had in my life. I'm thinking back, to my early years. My wife got pregnant before we got married. And, that was just when I was starting in real estate. I mean, I was starting in real estate when she got pregnant and then we got married and we were living in a 600 square foot apartment. Every time we'd pay bills, we'd get in a fight because the pressure was so great. I would say that was the most challenging time in my life, having a new wife, having a baby on the way, having no money, because when you start selling real estate, you have no money. And especially when you're 23 years old, and then knowing that she wouldn't be working and knowing that I had to perform. And that was, again, part of just said, okay, I got to go do what I got to do. And there's no looking back. I got to do it.
I see. All right. So when you don't have much money, you're living in a small place, you've got a new wife and a baby on the way, you just have to go and fight to get out of that, small place, to give yourself some room to breathe. By the way, you said earlier that you were living on the beach and that your grandchild might be running around and jump in on camera. By the way, that's one of the reasons why I love doing interviews via video Skype. You never know where we're going to find the person who I'm interviewing. You get to get a sense of who they are and where they live. Where is this beach? Where in the world are you?
Well, let me see. I'll just go right over here and see if you can look out there.
Oh, yeah. I see it.
Probably a little too shiny. I don't know if you can see the water
out
there.
No, I can see it. I see some bushes and I see the ocean behind you, right?
Yep. That's the Gulf of Mexico. So I live on Siesta Key, Florida.
Wow. How long have you lived there?
We have lived in Sarasota since 97. We've lived on the bay during most of that time. But believe it or not, we bought this place thinking we were going to tear it down. We designed a big, beautiful home for it. And then everything collapsed a couple of years ago. And we said, hey, let's not build yet. Let's move into the place we were going to tear down and see how we like it. So we're actually living in the little beach cottage that's been here since the 1950s. And we just love it. I mean, it is the best place we've ever lived. And even though it's probably the least desirable home, the location is without doubt awesome.
It looks like Dan Blank has a link to a map that shows the area where you live. It's kind of incredible that somebody will say something in an interview and Dan Blank or someone else in the audience will go and find information about it and put it into the chat room. Okay, so now you're helping other entrepreneurs. Actually, no, before we get into that, what about the direct sales business? What was that? How'd you get into that business?
Well, what happened was is that I enjoyed the success that we've talked about in real estate. And one day I was just driving down the road and I just, I was 28 years old. I couldn't even go on a date with my wife on a Friday night without my pager going off 15 times. I couldn't take a Sunday off without getting out of church on a Sunday morning and having 10 messages on my pager. And I just said, is this the way I want to live the rest of my life? And this was before they had real estate teams and things that would take the pressure off of an agent. And I said, no, I don't want to sell real estate the rest of my life. So I put together a list of what I felt was the ideal business. I want to work from my home. I, don't want any employees. I don't want any responsibilities such as leases and paperwork. I want to be able to do what I want when I want. I want to be able to take vacations. I mean, all the things I couldn't do when I was in real estate. And then actually responded to an ad in a business opportunity journal. Got started back in May of 1990. And just like everything else I've done, the first thing as I did is I went out and I identified some of the most successful people in the industry. I met with three people who were making over $500,000 a month and learned what it was that they did. I got started and my first 4 months in the industry, built a team of more than 1,600 people, broke all the records in a company of more than 2 million distributors. And then have now gone on over the last 20 years to have earned over $23 million and built an organization of more than 500,000 people around the world.
Is this multi-level marketing, by the way?
Yes.
It is. So what was the product that you guys were selling?
Our number one product is the all-natural, clinically proven alternative to statin medication for helping people optimize their cholesterol levels, lower their LDL, raise their HDL, lower triglycerides, stabilize blood sugars. So that product right there is probably of my sales, probably more than $500 million of my sales is just that one product.
How long have you been in the business since 1990?
Yep.
Okay. And, well, are you still in the business?
I still collect a check, which is one of the great things about it. And I still collect a check. I'm not overly active. I mean, I still support my people, but I'm not out recruiting or building new legs or anything like that. I just did an event this last weekend for that company. I'm also doing events for other companies outside of the industry. So I'm still spending time there, but most of my time, 90% of my time is being spent writing my blog posts, recording my podcast on my personal development blog, and managing my fan page, responding to people, responding to emails, all the things
Yeah. Yeah, no, because I saw you respond to my emails quickly. I saw the way that you were responding to people on Facebook. I saw the way you were engaged out there. And I also see, is it that you're writing a blog post every day and recording a short 5-minute podcast every day?
That's correct. And so basically what I've done, Andrew, is I have identified upwards now of 700 little things. I mean, a little thing would be just making eye contact when talking with somebody. The way that you smile, the way that you greet someone, remembering their name, shaking their hand, listening to them, not interrupting when they're talking. And so I've got upwards of 700 of these little things, and every day I'll teach at least one little thing. My post yesterday, as an example, was 35 little things that you can do in less than 10 seconds to make a positive impression on others. And if you look at my blog, you can see it was shared more than 350 times on Facebook. And so, yesterday was 35 little things, but some days it's just one thing. I mean, today, as an example, it's just one thing helping people understand that we're all different. We all come from different backgrounds. We all have different experiences, and that just because someone's views may be different than yours, it doesn't mean that theirs are wrong. Perhaps maybe yours is wrong. And so, every day I teach a little thing, at least one little thing, 5 days a week. And so that's what I'm doing.
And you're recording it daily?
Yes. And so basically what I do is I write each post out. They're more than likely between 500 and 1,000 words, probably averaging around 750 words each. And then I have it edited so that I look good, right? And then I record it. And I got a little bitty recording device that looks about like a cell phone that I record in my closet between my t-shirts where I got a nice quiet spot, and then my daughter edits it and adds my little jingle on, and and then we post it. And so every day you can subscribe for my podcast through iTunes, or you can listen right on the website. So there's a lot of people who just feel like they'd rather learn by listening. You know, maybe they're having coffee and they listen, they don't want to read. So I offer people my content through both of those mediums so that they can have whatever they prefer.
I saw it. I was wondering how you put that together, because it really is polished. Unlike here where I'm going back and forth, I say, by the way, 500 times. That's really polished, and now I see how you get it. How long does it take you to get those five-minute pieces?
It takes me about 2 hours to write the lesson, and then my editor will edit it, send it back to me. I'll probably spend another 20 minutes reading what she edited, you know, correcting, you know, things that I like or didn't like, because I want it to be me. And for me to record it, I read it out loud twice. To kind of get the enunciation right, to get the flow right, to get the feeling right, to make it doesn't sound like I'm reading. And then after I've read it out loud twice, then I'll go into my closet and I'll record it. And, you know, I don't ever record one of those things without making a mistake. I mean, I'm not perfect. But my daughter just edits those and makes me look perfect.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because I was listening to that and I said, he's probably just spending 5 minutes talking into a microphone, posting it online. How is it that I'm not so clear? How is it that I can't get my words out clearly? How is it that I'm stuttering and going back and forth on a single question? And it's interesting to see that it's not that you're knocking it out of the park on the first shot. You're writing it for a couple of hours. You're editing it. You're going back and forth. Your daughter's editing it from there. So why? This is like I'm counting 3-4 hours of work into a single blog post. Why do you spend so much time?
Because I've got the time. I take pride in what I do. My attitude is, that if I'm going to put my name on something, I want it to be the best that it can be. And, part of this content also is going to be regurgitated for my book. Some of my lessons will be lessons that you'll never see in my book, because my first book is going to be upwards of about 300 little things that apply to people's personal and professional life. As an example, making eye contact would apply both in your social relationships as well as in your business relationships. So my first book is going to be things that apply to both. But yet, I've got, if you go on there, I mean, I've got business texting etiquette and all kinds of things that won't ever appear in the book, but that I do them because I want to appeal to my audience, which is primarily professionals that are trying to grow and develop themselves. At this point, I'm putting the time into creating the content, trying to build a following. I realize that, as you certainly know, it's content is king out there, and I want to take pride in developing great content to give people the confidence to recommend me to their friends, because it's all the word of mouth that grows this. And also knowing that, my content will be used in some capacity down the road, both in my book and in, audio programs that I create.
But I was thinking back to what I said earlier about how it takes me forever, and I wonder why it takes everyone else so much less time. And meanwhile, I'm imagining it doesn't really take them so much less time. I know I'm going to get email from people saying, Andrew, don't put down your work. I don't think I am putting down my work. I think I'm being very open about what I feel with my interviews. I think I'm being very open about what I care about and what I don't care about. When I say that the lighting in here is awful, it's an admission of the truth. The lighting in here is awful. It's making me look terrible. But I'm also going to say that I don't care about that. That's not part of what drives me, and it's not what I'm going to spend a lot of time on here. What I do care about is just pushing through and really learning and really finding out why people do things and how they're building their businesses and motivation. And I'm especially curious about why you would care about writing a book. Why spend all this time to put together a book? There's zillions of books out there. No one's going to get rich writing a book. We've discovered that you can't even really build a reputation for yourself off of a book. Most books sit nowhere in the virtual bookcase. So why?
Well, first of all, let me say to you, Andrew, I mean, you come across great. You're very authentic. That's why people love you. That's why your traffic is growing. So, there's only a few people I've ever met in my life who are like President Obama, that, can just open their mouth and the words just flow out. I'm not one of those people either. And I built a whole career by fumbling my way through what I'm saying.
I don't see that, actually. I've been paying attention to the way you've expressed yourself here. You're doing a very good job at it, and I'm sure that you weren't just born this way. I'm sure that all those phone calls and all the analysis after every one of those phone calls helped. I'm sure that going and speaking to large crowds and showing them how they can sell has helped. I'm sure that writing every day now and editing it and all the work that you put in has made you a better speaker. And I'm sure that also for me, every one of these interviews, every time that I get on camera, I get a little bit better. I get a little bit more comfortable. People should have seen me in the first ones. In fact, go back and listen to the first ones. I was god awful. I think admitting where I wasn't good and focusing on improving it is what's helped me get a little bit better every day. Okay, so let's go back to the book. Who cares? A book? You're a businessman.
Well, it really began for me, Andrew. I did retire as I wanted to. And you know, I went and took golf lessons every day, and you know, ended up feeling like I was taking on another job, you know, with the golf lessons. And I just said, you know, what do I want to do with my life? And I was reading Success Magazine, and it's one of the best publications I think in the marketplace. And you know, there was a couple articles last year that talked about your legacy. What kind of legacy do you want to leave? And so I started to think, you know, what kind of legacy do I want to leave? And you know, what has made me successful? What can I offer people? And I feel like that I've got a very unique strength, and I've also had a very unique experience. I mean, being in the position that I've been within the direct selling industry, where I can see literally thousands, tens of thousands of people fail and thousands succeed, and saying, what is the difference? And I can identify the difference. I mean, I can talk to somebody in an hour, I can tell you in any line of work if they're going to be successful and where they fall on that pay scale. And so, yeah, I felt like I had a gift in this area. And, you know, I said, you know, I don't want to just sit at home and go fishing every day and go golfing. I want to be able to do something that I'm proud of, that when I die and people don't just look at Todd as being a successful business guy, but somebody who really did impact millions of people's lives. And that's what my goal is. I mean, millions is a big number, but, you know, I believe that that I can do that. You know, I'm 47 years old, so I've got some time left. And in my book, the real thing is with the book is I believe it's an opportunity to help me spread the word. It allows me to help me communicate to people the things that really will help them achieve greater personal and professional success. It will give me credibility. I mean, you know, being an author gives a person credibility. Being a best-selling author gives them more credibility. And so I believe that for me to reach the group that I want to reach, I need credibility beyond my past credibility. And so I believe the book is going to help me do that. So it's all part of my long-term objective to really go out and to help people from all walks of life achieve greater success. And, you know, my thing, Andrew, I'm absolutely convinced that that anybody could be successful at anything that's important to them if they will focus on the little things that matter. I've done it in the printing business. I did it in real estate. I did it in direct sales. I coached my son's little league team. We went 20-0. We won by an average of 17 runs a game because I hired two professional ball players to come and to teach me the fundamentals of how to field a ground ball, how to properly throw a ball, how to hit a ball. You know, it's something you could apply to anything. Learn from the best how they've done it and apply it. And that's what I've done with my blog too. You talked about, you know, how my blog looks. I studied the top blogs. Yours was one of them, and looked at what they had done well, and then put together mine. So everything I do is based upon studying what the best people do, and I believe any listener that is out there can achieve whatever it is that's on their mind, whatever their dream is that they have, if they will focus on the little things in what they're doing, both the activities they're engaged in and how they perform those activities greater, and then who they are as a person, the relationships they build, how they interact, how they communicate, how they brand themselves, what their emails look like, what they sound like on the phone, how they present themselves in person, how likable they are, all those things.
You said earlier that you've seen thousands of successes and failures, that you can talk to somebody for an hour and know which one they're going to be, that you know the difference. What is the difference? What have you seen?
It's about what's important. It's me saying, if you were to do whatever it is that you're wanting to do, why would you do it? And listening, and then asking them on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is that to you? And if it's not an 8, 9, or 10, I know right now they're not following through. Because when it gets time for people to get uncomfortable, to make calls, to push themselves outside their comfort zone, to give presentations, they're not going to do that unless their desire is great enough to overcome the obstacle of the fear and the uncomfortable feeling they're going to have when they have to do what they really need to do to be successful.
So if Troy in the audience is building some internet company and I ask him, what's the internet company and how important is it for you to really make this thing a hit? If he says, well, you know, I didn't really invest that much time in it. It's a small business. Maybe it'll go somewhere. Maybe I'll go do something else. You know, he doesn't have it. But if he's fiery, if he says, I've got to do this, if he'll shut you up when you start to come up with too many objections or with objections to the internet as a whole, then, you know, maybe he's got something.
Yeah, and that's absolutely the case. I mean, you know, people have got to have that burning passion, that desire from deep down inside. It's got to be something that's pushing them, driving them. And if they've got that for what they're doing, and then they really go and say, okay, what are the activities that I need to engage in to perform at the highest level of what I'm doing? And then identify those activities and then look to master those activities, every one of those. And that's what I did in everything I've done. I have mastered everything. Every activity of everything I've done, I've mastered.
Somebody in the audience was asking me to talk about the negative side of multi-level marketing. I'd like to. I'd like to even do a whole interview on both sides of it. I don't think Mixergy is about multi-level marketing, but I'd like to do an interview on both sides of it. I think that part of the discussion, I think that it's outside the scope of our discussion. But Todd, when I do an interview on it, what should I be talking about with my guests? What are the negative sides that I need to be asking questions about?
Well, you know, network marketing is like anything in sales. I mean, when I was in real estate, 1 out of 100 real estate agents in the state of Illinois would renew their license a year later. These are people who went to school for 8 weeks. They spent $500 on real estate school. They got a license, but yet they didn't follow through with it. Multi-level or direct sales has got a very low cost of entry. Most people can get started for $35, $40. And it's the same thing. Unless they've got that desire that's great enough to push them, they're going to fail. And so, you know, there's just such a large number of people that come into the direct sales industry that really don't have that desire to improve their quality of life great enough that they end up quitting. But also there's a whole lot of expectations. There's a whole lot of people out there who lead people to believe they're going to make more than perhaps they are. I mean, somebody might be making $20 an hour and somebody's saying, you're going to make $100 an hour. Well, that's not realistic. You're not going to take your value to the market at $20 an hour, and just because you've changed vehicles, you're not going to go to $100 an hour. You're not going to do that in anything. You've got to incrementally increase your value to the market if you want to make more money. And so, you know, network marketing, direct sales is like every other business model out there. It works. It works for the people who apply themselves, and it doesn't work for the people who don't.
Okay. All right. I'll save the rest of it for another discussion, another interview. Let's see. I guess, Todd, where can people connect with you?
You know, the best thing is if what I'm talking about is of interest to people, go to littlethingsmatter.com. That's my blog. In the upper right corner, there's a little blue box where you can subscribe. I don't sell anything. Everything I'm doing for the first time in my life is free. So you can subscribe to my podcast. They're free. You can subscribe to my blog. It's free. You can go to my fan page, which was called a fan page. Now they're no longer calling them that. But my Facebook page at facebook.com/littlethingsmatter. I put little nuggets up there. And then my larger lessons on my blog. So that's how I can best help people, Andrew.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Thanks for doing this interview. Thanks for the help before. In fact, like I said in the beginning of the interview, the only reason that I connected with Todd is he sent me a bunch of tips. He said, well, here's what you could do differently. Here's another way of thinking of things. And it was helpful. And I really appreciate that. Thank you, Todd.
Well, you're doing a great job, Andrew. I enjoy your shows and you're really helping a lot of people. And I could see probably from your blog, you're probably being grossly underpaid too right now in your life for what you're doing. But you're helping a lot of people, and you know what goes around comes around. Keep doing what you're doing, and the rewards will be there for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you guys for watching. I'm Andrew. I'll see you in the comments.